You're listening to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, Craig D tells us about his well-rounded cacher experience. We give you part two of our catch-up with Liz and Bruce, and we have audio from the Clean Up Australia Day event down in Bundina. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 43 of GeoTalk. It's now March, which means it's autumn in the land down under, and certainly you can feel it in the morning when it's a little bit crisp. It's not quite that sort of muggy, hot weather that particularly down in the south we've been having over the last few months. And also notice that the days are getting noticeably shorter, and if you're not aware, daylight saving ends in southern and eastern Australia on the first Sunday of April. It's a week later. I think it was moved last year. So don't change your clocks on the last Sunday of March. It's the first Sunday of April. Well, on to geocaching news. And first of all, those of you who are not aware, it's WWFM5 planning time. It's going to be held on Saturday, the 2nd of May, 2009. Although if you are coinciding it with the exact time over in San Diego with Sunny and Sandy, then it would be, I think, about 3 a.m. on Sunday, the 3rd of May. But the events that have been listed so far in Australia are occurring in Adelaide, Berry, Melbourne and Perth. And from when I last checked, they'll all be on Saturday morning. And hopefully we might have one in Sydney coming up. So you can check out more on that. I'll give you a link in the show notes to a bookmark list, which has all the different countries and all the different cities that are involved. I think at the moment it's just over 50 and there are 13 countries, including Afghanistan. So check those out. In website news, Groundspeak have made a few changes over the last few weeks. The main one is to the My Profile page. So if you go to geocaching.com/my, you might notice that there's some extra links in the right-hand column. One of those, for example, is My GPS. So you can actually now nominate what model of GPS you have. There's been a few complaints over those teams that have multiple GPS units. You should be so lucky. For the moment, you can enter in one GPS unit, give it a star rating and give it a review as well. And some people have rumored that Groundspeak might sort of collate all that data and use it as a way in which newbies and those who are looking at upgrading their GPS can look at what the geocaching community thinks of those units. So check those out at the Groundspeak's website. Also, a few changes are being made to the Geocaching Australia website. Now, most of this is in the back end, and the fairies are working overtime. They've been working over the last couple of weeks, transferring data to some new servers. Now, everything seems to be going fine at the moment. There haven't been too many hiccups. I did notice about a month ago I had a problem uploading some images to one of my cache pages, but that's been rectified now. And if you notice any problems, let them know by going to the GCA forums, and there's a section there on the GCA website where you can post any problems that you're experiencing. I mentioned in the previous episode that there's a geocoin being put together for the Victorian bushfire appeal, and that's getting into its final stages now, and in fact they're accepting pre-orders. So if you go to geocachestore.com.au or head to our website and click on the link on the show notes, it'll take you to where you can pre-order the coin. Now, I think from memory it's about $15 each. The costs have been brought right down both by the Geocache store, who are distributing the coins, and also by the manufacturer. And the profits from all of the coin sales will be going to the Red Cross Victoria Bushfire Appeal. On one side, it's got Sam the Koala with the CFA firefighter, and on the back is a burnt tree in the shape of a heart symbolising hope, with a little message of support for the bushfire victims and also for the people who have supported those who are in need. So check out that geocachestore.com.au and support the Victorian Bushfire Appeal. Now, it wouldn't be a podcast about geocaching if we didn't look at some of the tools of the trade. And one of those tools is, of course, the GPS unit. And it looks like REI have let the cat out of the bag with the announcement that Garmin are putting out two new versions of the Oregon touchscreen GPS. Now, according to GPS review blog, A reader has found on REI's website the Garmin Oregon 500 and the 500T. Now, they look almost identical to the 400 and 400T, except the new models have a digital camera built into it. Now, this is similar to the Magellan Triton, which had the high-end had a camera built in as well. So it's not surprising that they've added that device. The details are a little bit sketchy, as you would presume, and there's probably a few more extra features that are going to be in this unit. But having a camera would mean that you wouldn't have to take any other camera along with you. You'd also be able to geotag your photos. So it could be a big bonus for those who are looking to upgrade their GPS or even just buy their very first one for geocaching. Now, of course, it's going to come at a price. According to the person who spotted this on REI's website before it was taken down, the 500 was listed as $549 US and the 500T at $599 US. So we're looking close to about the $700 to $800 mark here in Australia. So check those out in the near future. Now, another tech device that geocachers are starting to take with them are netbooks. Now, netbooks are a smaller version of a laptop or notebook computer, and they're usually about the 1 kilogram mark. And the Australian magazine Choice, or Choice Computer, has just done a review of a group of netbooks that are available here in Australia. And you can go to the Choice website and just read the sort of description, the front description of it. You have to become a member to read the full detailed report, including the testing that they did on those units. But I can tell you that the MSI Wind scored the best overall in their tests. They said it had a good combination of performance and battery life, and that came in just ahead of the ASUS EPC 1000H and the Twinhead Twinmate X10. So they were the top three netbooks that they rated. They also gave a mention to the Dell unit, which is also available because it was the cheapest unit and it still had very good performance and battery life. It was a little bit slower than the others, but then at only $500, it was also the cheapest. So check that out. I'll give you a link in the show notes on the website. And just finally, for those of you who are iPhone freaks or thinking of getting one, Apple just this week announced the release of the iPhone 3.0 platform, which is a little bit similar to the current version. But the great bonuses is, first of all, it will allow MMS messaging. So you'll be able to send photos and movies and so forth through the SMS type system. And it also includes copy, cut and paste, which is something that I know a lot of people, not just geocachers, have been wanting in the device. And we might see maybe a few more geocaching applications where you'll be able to copy and paste information between different applications. So if that's what's been holding you back, well, there you go. It's going to be out fairly soon. That's the iPhone 3.0 platform. Well, it's time now for our interview with Craig D, but before we do, I've got to give you the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. Which geocaches in Australia and New Zealand have the highest number of first to finds? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. In part two of our look at the well-rounded Acacia competition, we've got the other half of first place, which was Craig D, also from down in Victoria. Thanks for joining us on GeoTalk.
It's good to be with you, Darren.
Now, first of all, tell us, how did you get into geocaching and, of course, how did you come up with your screen name?
Okay, I got into geocaching through a bit of a convoluted route. I had been aware of the sport for some time. Had come across people on bushwalks and through various activities, and occasionally you'd see someone retrieve a plastic box from somewhere. And so I was certainly aware of the sport, and I ended up buying a GPS for other reasons and decided to pursue it. And for my screen name, I went through a bit of a stage of trying to identify myself with my own name online. So Craig was taken, obviously, so I just used Craig D.
Okay. Now, how long ago did you start geocaching?
It was back in early 2007, I think.
Okay. And you said earlier that you're a bit of a bushwalker, so obviously you like the outdoors and you like getting to those slightly more remote geocaching locations?
Yes, definitely. One of the first caches that I found was your cache in Kosciuszko National Park at Valentine's Falls. It was called Lover's Leap. And that was about the 10th cache that I found and really enjoyed it. So most of my geocaching, or my favourite geocaching locations, are ones that require a lot of physical effort to get to. So often I'll visit them as part of a weekend walk, sometimes as part of an extended trip of up to a week.
Now, I should have asked you earlier on, where in Australia are you located?
I'm located in Shepparton, which is in northern Victoria.
Okay. And that area seems to have a little bit of a reputation for some tricky hides. Do you get to try some of those caches in Shepparton and the Bendigo area?
Yes. So I started caching in Bendigo and it was a rather steep learning curve. I spent a lot of time searching for caches and I was quite stubborn in my earlier days. I refused to contact anyone for help. So, yes, it took me quite a long time. Sometimes I would head out for an afternoon and I'd be very, very happy if I came back with one or two finds. In Shepparton, there's a range of very challenging hides as well, and there's also a good variety of puzzles.
Now, one of the reasons why we got you on the podcast is to talk about the well-rounded cacher. Now, you finished equal first with Marcus Vitruvius on 80 out of 81. How agonising was it to fall that one cache short?
Not as bad as you might think, Darren. When I originally started the competition, I honestly didn't expect to get up to 80 finds at all. Both Warren and myself, along with probably quite a few of the other competitors, we started planning very early on, not long after the competition was first announced. And it soon became apparent that there was a lot of interstate travel involved to reach all these elusive combinations. And it became very obvious to me that a trip to Queensland would be necessary, and I wasn't prepared to make that trip.
Okay. So you both finished on the same amount of points. Did you do any caching together during that competition period?
No, we didn't. we have been caching before in the past and we did cross wires at one point. I spent an evening with Warren talking about caching matters. But I did manage to cache with quite a few caches during the competition period, quite a few of them in the ACT and also a couple here in Victoria.
Okay. Now, obviously, you got the 5-5 cache. Which one was that?
That was a cache in the Blue Mountains. It is Drop Dead Gorgeous, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So one of the older caches around. We won't give too much away about what that one is. what were some of the more memorable or difficult caches that you did?
Well, the first weekend of the competition happened to coincide with the Melbourne Cup long weekend. Or the Melbourne Cup long weekend for us Victorian caches anyway. So I headed up to the ACT and went on a four-day bushwalk up along the New South Wales ACT border and managed to find quite a few remote caches there. Ones that come to mind are Brumby Trail, A Long Way to the Top, and the top ACT, Bimbury Wilderness.
Being in a regional area, how difficult was it to even organise to find some of the lower ones, such as the 1-1s and the 1-1.5s?
It wasn't too bad. I'm not a numbers cacher, so I am very selective with the caches that I find. So at the lower end of the scale, there was quite a lot of variety for me to find. Some of the combinations haven't got very many hides. I think a difficulty 3 terrain 1, there was only a couple of those in Victoria. So there was still a fair bit of travelling involved, even at the lower end of the scale. I had to make a trip to Melbourne early in the competition to go and get rid of some of those combinations.
Has doing the competition sort of changed your view of geocaching in any way?
Oh, definitely. Before the competition, I didn't really make a huge amount of contact with other geocachers, but yes, the competition certainly changed all that. The only way you can really find so many different caches in such a short time period is to team up with other people and get some encouragement from them and, share experiences. Mm-hmm. And also in the competition, it sort of changed the areas that I've geocached in. Before the competition started, I never really considered going to the urban areas to cache, but because of some of the difficulty and terrain combinations of the caches that I had to find. It meant that I did have to go down to these urban areas and really push the limits, or my personal limits, to find them. So, you know, using stealth and finding nanos and things like that, I never had done that before the competition started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, well, it's all over and now you've basically got the year ahead of you. Have you got any goals that you've set for yourself for geocaching in 2009?
No, not really, Darren. Take it easy for the next couple of weeks, or maybe even a month or two, and maybe get back into it.
And any advice for people who are thinking of, you know, trying to complete the well-rounded cacher themselves, even though the competition isn't running?
Take your time and do your planning. There's a lot of planning involved to pick up all these combinations.
Well, on behalf of everyone who listens to Geo Talk, thanks very much for joining us, Craig D.
Thank you, Darren.
Sunday the 1st of March was Clean Up Australia Day, and a number of geocachers in Brisbane, Taree and in Bundina, south of Sydney, got together and organised their own CETO events as part of Clean Up Australia Day. I headed down to the Bundina event down at Royal National Park, and here's some audio I captured after the event.
Well, it's Darren here. We're sitting in Bundina after doing a fairly warm and quite a physical CETO, where I'm part of Clean Up Australia Day on the 1st of March. Bundina is a town down in the south part of Sydney in Royal National Park, and there was about 20 geocachers that headed down, and down to Bundina, collected the bags, and off we walked along the beach, and we managed to fill almost all of the 20 bags that we had with us. Mostly glass seemed to be what we were collecting. A lot of broken bottles and discarded bottles that had been thrown probably by boats that had docked up near the beach. And after 2 hours and a lot of collecting, we left the bags at a couple of points, marked them to the GPS so that the national parks can pick them up, and hopefully we've left the place in a much cleaner state than what it was. So I might go around and chat to a few of the geocachers involved in the CETO event.
Yeah, Phil, you can tell us what did you think of the CETO event?
I haven't done one of those before, but it was quite enjoyable. It really isn't such hard work, collecting bottles and cans and enjoying the scenery while I'm in the area. We even saw a bit of wildlife in a diamond python along the way. It was all good. It was most enjoyable. Certainly be part of one again.
Were you surprised by the amount of rubbish that was there in the park?
Yeah, actually. And some of it looks, it's not like there was a lot of new stuff. The majority of it looked like it had been there for quite some time. So. Old bottles and mainly bottles and cans and the sort of thing which take a bit longer, I guess, to weather down. But it was good stuff. I'd say they're part of one again.
Oh, that's good. All right, we'll go around and see who else. Deputy Dog, how'd you find today, mate? Bit of hard work?
Yeah, well, we went with Ruffles Guts and paths were sort of optional for him, but it was good fun. Good fun.
Would you do it again?
Yeah, we'll be back.
All right. And over here is the birthday boy, Webby, how did you enjoy the CETO, mate? Or did you enjoy it at all?
Yeah, it was good, mate.
Yeah. Nothing like picking rubbish up on your birthday?
Well, that normally happens anyway.
So would you be keen to do another CETO event soon?
Yeah, we'll be planning another one. We'll try and get one up the Blue Mountain soon.
Okay, and we've got Frank here, Pipes Down Under. How did you enjoy the CETO event?
Terrific, actually. It's probably the first event I've gone out and met a few other geocachers, and glad to be doing a little bit for the sport, and hopefully help out with some future decisions with the national park.
Yeah, that's excellent. And finally, we got Lynn, who's a fairly new geocacher. Lynn, how did you find cleaning up on a geocaching morning?
Oh, it's great fun. The beach is beautiful and it's great to talk to everybody and learn a little bit about what I should look for next time I can't find anything.
All right, well, there you go. There's some of the people who helped us out with the CPO event in Bundina, and now we're having a well-earned lunch and a drink, and maybe some of us will go for a swim. So if you've got a CPO event in your local area, think about going along. If you don't have one, want an organised one, and speak to your local council or parks and see if you can do a little bit in the name of geocaching.
Well, thank you to everyone who was involved in that CTO. I'd like to say it was a lot of fun. It was a bit of hard work and it was certainly a great day, and particularly the barbecue afterwards. Listen, if you want to organise your own CTO event, you don't have to wait until Clean Up Australia Day in March next year. You could coincide it in May with Earth Day, or you can hold a CTO event any time of the year. Just make sure that you get in touch with the landowner and organise with them the best place to clean up and where to leave your collection, and hopefully you'll be able to leave a cleaner environment for geocachers and the public at large. Well, now it's time for part two of our interview with Liz from Liz and Bruce. And Liz left us last episode on their way back to Adelaide before they headed across to Western Australia.
Friends of ours asked us if we would house sit for them while we were in Adelaide, because they knew Bruce had to get some medical things done. So they said that they were going to be away in England for about 4 months, and would we look after their place? So we said as long as we could take our caravan there, because we were happy to caretake as long as we could live in our caravan.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we did. We went down to one of the suburbs of Adelaide, looked after the house for them, stayed in the caravan, and Bruce had the treatment that he needed to have done. And then we got away probably November time, it would have been last year, 08, and went to York Peninsula, and which is in South Australia. Did lots of geocaching there, met up with other friends there. And then we decided which way we'd go, because at that point we really weren't sure whether we'd head east or west, but decided that we'd head west. And so this is where we are now. So, yeah, crossed a Nullarbor in about sort of 40-odd degree heat. You know, we've stayed at lots of lovely little bush camps, and pretty much as we've been travelling along, like if we see that there's a geocache in an area, well, we figure that it's probably worth going to, and often they're in a bush camp anyway, so we can stay the night, do the cache, pack up next day and head off to the next place.
I was going to ask, are there many caches along the Nullarbor?
There's probably about, would you say half a dozen? Yeah, probably only about half a dozen. And we managed to get one approved. We put one out. We stopped one night at a place called Newman Rocks. And it was a fantastic little overnight camp. And so we hit a cache there. And there is a team that actually has got some other caches there. And we were able to nominate them as caretakers.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's called Newman at Nullarbor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's somewhere that geocachers can stop at as they're travelling the Nullarbor. Yeah, and you can actually have a little swim there. Well, when we were there, there'd been some rain, and there's this granite formation has formed like a natural dam, and the rains run in there, and you can, you know, the water's about chest height, and you can go in there and have a beautiful cool lough, and yeah, it's really lovely.
So with all that travelling, because you've been doing it now for a bit over 2 years, maybe more, close to 3 years?
Yeah, well, we've had the van for 4 years, so we've pretty much been travelling all of that. But, yeah, the main travel, well, we sold our house a year after we got the caravan, so the serious travel's probably been about 3 years. Yeah.
And do you know how many kilometres now you've clocked up on the van?
Oh, no, I don't know. The service we're getting on the Toyota is at about 160,000. Yeah, it's 160,000. And it had probably done about, 50,000 when we'd headed off, 40,000 when we'd headed off.
Wow. That's
so
quite
we've done lots of kilometres. And, you know, people often say to us, you know, how many times have you been around Australia? And we say, no, we just take chunks out. You know, we just concentrate, you know, whether it be on the east coast or the west coast, and so we're hoping to be over here hopefully for a couple of years. on the west coast. So we'll sort of have two seasons of going up north, and then, you know, a couple of, you know, different times that we can look around sort of Perth and do some caching around Perth, because we haven't actually done many caches in Western Australia because the area we've travelled in so far hasn't had a lot of caches.
All right, I was going to ask what is the future. So obviously it's a few years in WA, heading up north, and then what, eventually heading back to the east coast, maybe down to Victoria or Tasmania?
Yeah, we think that on the second time, so probably this next dry season when we head up north, we'll probably only go as far as Port Hedland, and then come next summer we'll probably head back down to Perth, and then the following dry season we'll go up towards the Bungle Ranges, Kununurra, and then go over the top to the Northern Territory. And we just haven't decided what we do after that, whether or not we end up coming back through Mount Isa or into Queensland, or whether we come straight down through Alice Springs into Adelaide. We really don't know. It
sounds like you're seeing a lot of Australia and you're meeting a lot of geocaches. Now, everyone can still follow you. You've still got your Travel Bug blog running.
Yeah. So, the Travel Bug's still active, and I mean, I've been a little bit slack, I must admit, but I would like ideally to put entries in about every 6 weeks, and it's probably been a little bit longer than that, but you know, probably every couple of months I'd at least put an entry on, which is usually, you know, reasonably comprehensive about what we've been doing and where we've been going, and there's usually lots of photos attached to that as well. And you know, there's, you know, anyone that's interested can put it on their watch list. I mean, we're sort of finding the internet access not so readily available because we've always relied just on the libraries. And like through South Australia and even on the East Coast, it's been really good and we haven't had any problems. But we're sort of noticing in Western Australia, it's just so far, and maybe it's because we've been in the more remote locations, we just haven't been able to get the internet access as easily. But, you know, hopefully, but we'll be in Albany in the next week, and hopefully we can get into something there and get caught up with things, and hopefully put a Travel Bug entry in then too.
Well, look, I won't keep you any longer. I know it's your dinner time over in WA, and look, it's been great speaking to you again.
That's all right.
And hopefully we'll check in maybe in another 12 months and see where you are in Australia.
That would be fine.
Thanks very much, Liz.
Bye-bye now.
Well, now it's time for the geocaching tip for this particular episode. And a big thanks to Camstool from Central Queensland who sent us in this tip. And for sending it in, it's going to get a bag of fire tacks. Courtesy of geocachestore.com.au. And if you've got your own tip, don't forget to send it in because we've got a couple of more packs to give away. Now, Camstool's tip is, instead of spending time trying to look for your geocaching gear, such as your GPS device or your spare batteries or your trackables, why not buy a large Systema clip lock container and store all your swaps, your batteries and your GPS unit in it? It'll work a treat, so as soon as you see a new cache listed in your area, you can grab that container and go for the first to find. Well, thanks very much for that, Camstool. As I said, for that, we'll send you out a pack of fire tacks in the post. If you've got your own geocaching tip, whether it be something like, you know, getting your gear ready, or whether it's something to do with the website or software, drop us an email, geotalk@mac.com, or you can call it in on 02800 50 436. Well, now it's time to have a quick look at some of the events that are occurring around the country over the next few weeks. On the 22nd of March is Meet Two Kiwis and a Cane Toad. That'll be held out at Glenelg, out on the beach there near Adelaide. On the 28th of March is a social geocaching barbecue. That'll be in Perth, just on the eastern outskirts, I think. On the 5th of April is my first event cache, which will be held somewhere in Canberra. It's an interesting one because it's got a puzzle for the location. And on the 7th of April is Go and Do Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. And that'll be held in Adelaide. And it's a bit of an introduction course on Aussie Explorer. If you've got any events you want to publicise and give us a bit of a spiel yourself, give us a call on 02 800 50 436. Well, there's no emails in the GeoTalk email bag for this particular episode, but I wanted to give a very quick mention to a milestone that was achieved quite recently and appeared on the GCA forums. It's a big shout out to Secret Squirrel down in Canberra. Now, they have a little club down there called the Zero Club, and Secret Squirrel has become only the third geocacher to achieve it after Tank Engine and Mountain Biker Oz. And the Zero Club is being able to find every cache that exists in the ACT, in the Capital Territory, so that basically you've got zero left. Now, that occurred sometime late on the 15th of March when Secret Squirrel BJC reached the milestone. Unfortunately, later that day, there was a new cache that was already set up, but it only took him 2 years and 2 months to clear all the caches, and that's somewhere in the order of about 550, almost close to 600 caches in the region. So, congratulations, Secret Squirrel, on reaching that milestone, and I'm sure you'll have fun trying to chase after it over the next few months and years. Now, if you haven't already checked it out, GeoTalk has a Facebook group, which if you go to Facebook and do a search on GeoTalk, you can join almost 100 members on that group. And currently they're discussing cache maintenance, how often they go out there, when do they do cache maintenance, and what when do they archive a cache. There's quite a few responses and suggestions on that list. And if you join up and add to that to that topic before the 31st of March, you can go into the draw to win an Edelweiss geocoin courtesy of Ernie's from Switzerland. So check that out. And also, if you're into Twitter for some reason and you want to follow my rantings and ravings, you can check me out on Spindoc Bob over at Twitter. Well, that's it for this episode. Before we go, the answer to the trivia question: who has the most FTFs from Australia and New Zealand? Now, I thought I'd include this little one in because the person who is there's a couple of people who are appearing on the top that are actually from the US, so I'm not sure how those stats snuck in, but I do know one of them is VK2AAQ. Now, he normally lives in the US, but he does spend quite a few months here in Sydney, and he currently has 1,793 FTFs. And that's just quite amazing, but I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle over in the US. But if we just strip it back to those people from Australia who started geocaching here, on top of the list is Macamob with 623, followed by Team Astro on 463, Tank Engine on 335, Pirate 63 on 311, and coming in equal fifth are 4Fun and Scenic Routers with 298 FTFs. So there you go. They're the cache hounds. If they're in your area, I'm sure that you have quite a bit of a hard time trying to get one of your own. Well, before we go, don't forget to visit the website at geotalkpodcast.com. You can also send us an email at geotalk@mac.com, and you can Skype or give us a call on 02 800 50 436. We'd love to hear from you. In our next episode, GeoTalk's going to hit the road as we travel to the ACT, and we're going to give you the winners of their Cache of the Year awards for 2008. Until next time, safe geocaching.